Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
So before we jump in, I do want to run through, I have been going through our requests, and there's four of them that have developments or an arrest, and we haven't covered them, and I want anyone that suggested them to know. And Amy, one of them happened, like, in your backyard. So Peter Recchia was suggested to us as a missing person. In March of 2020, he was actually found, passed away. And they assumed that it was a medical issue, that he succumbed to the elements, essentially. That being said, we won't cover it as a missing person because he has passed away. The next case is Zeb Quinn. This has an arrest, and although they're still pending trial, we aren't going to cover something that has an arrest and a trial pending, because that's when you don't need a lot of thoughts and theories, because they're trying to put actual data together. But a man was arrested for the crime, and although he's maintained his innocence, he had murdered other people, and he knew the victim. So Zeb Quinn, that's that. There's also people requested we cover Erica Baker, who was in Ohio. Well, 3 days, I'm going to read this direct from the Charlie Project. Someone pleaded guilty right before the statute of limitations expired. In February 2004, he was indicted for evidence tampering and an abuse of a corpse. They think that he was driving a van which killed the little girl and then covered up the crime. He confessed the crime and says that he was drunk and on drugs and was shoplifting. And he led authorities to various places, but they never found a body. Then he pleaded not guilty, and he maintains his innocence. He was still convicted in October of 2005 for 6 years for the crimes he was charged with. Either way, we aren't going to cover that. So those three cases had movement, so we likely won't cover them because there is, you know, things law enforcement is doing, or there is an answer. And I just wanted to put that out there for y'all to hear that.
Thank you.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, every time I punch things into the computer to save them, I have this moment of, I'm really proud of us and like, I'm really happy to be doing this because I punched in episode 91 today.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I ever imagined being able to do this for so long.
I don't think I did either. I don't think we had like a, this'll be this long. But it's been crazy.
It has been. Regardless of how we got here, I'm happy for it. We've said it a million times over and we'll say it again. Thank you for being more than 12 listeners, because that was our goal.
Yes.
Fair enough, but it, you know, we cherish every single one of you, so who knows? If you wanted us to keep going, we probably would have.
Yeah, you're right. Well, because we like this.
Oh, yeah. for example, I think it was our Patreon episode that I covered on the Jameson family. Melissa went to QA the episode, and the string of texts starts where she's like, I don't understand. I don't understand what happened to this family.
Yes.
It makes no sense to me. And she started rehashing the whole thing. So we don't quit when we stop recording.
No, we don't. And I actually told my neighbor to Google the case and give me her thoughts. Because I just am, you know.
Wherever we can get more theories.
Yes. Tell me them all.
Right.
All right. So you have a case today.
I do. I actually have no idea at all how I came across it. I really don't. And I've thought about it and I'm like, was I looking for it? Did I stumble on it? Nope. Don't know. But anyway, when I started reading it, it probably further pulled me in because she is a Connecticut native, at least at one point in her life. So I just tend to be attracted to people from your area. And I think that's pretty normal, right? Because we feel like we can get a better picture.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, you understand where they grew up, especially, which is why we identify with people in our age group, because we understand what was happening in society around us at that age.
That's a really good point, too. So I was shocked. That's the word I'm going to use, that I hadn't heard of this case. And I don't mean that in like an arrogant way, like I should know all the cases out there or anything. But this case kind of felt like it had Maura Murray vibes or like Natalie Holloway vibes, and roughly the same era. She's a few years older than me. And I kind of understood all that. So I just thought that I would have come across a case like this. And there was stuff out there when I went looking. So it's not to say that there was a lack of information. It just surprised me. And then it gets you thinking that what are the other cases that I don't know about? And how tragic is it that everybody doesn't know about these cases? Anyway, that'll go into the same old spiel.
I will say I know the name because she was requested by Galen, but that's it. I don't know the case at all.
Really? It was on our request list.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that I missed that. I'm glad to do it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did it.
Okay. Well, great. Then I'm going to tell you who it is because now you're really wondering. So the case I'm going to cover today is the case of Kristen Mataferi. Kristen Mataferi was born on June 1st of 1979 in Danbury, Connecticut. She was born to Bob and Debbie and had three other sisters. I don't know the exact order of children, but I know that she wasn't the oldest, or I'm pretty sure she wasn't the oldest, but she definitely wasn't the youngest. Sometime early on, the family decided to move to Charlotte, North Carolina. Right? Very similar journey to yourself.
Yep.
Kristen was extremely smart and she excelled in school. Some reports say she either skipped a grade or she graduated early. Either way, I mean, it really in essence is skipping a grade. I just don't know whether it's more accurate that she skipped a grade in elementary school or in high school. But I mean, she's really a hard worker, a hustler, and it also seems like the schooling thing came pretty easy to her. Kristen enjoyed the arts, mostly photography, and she was a really good kid. She wasn't afraid of working to get what she needed, so this wasn't a kid that was like smart and doing her thing and kind of rode her parents' coattails or got things handed to her. She worked. So this hard work definitely paid off, and she ended up getting a full ride to North Carolina State University for all 4 years. Like, she was going to college for free.
I don't know why I don't know this case with so many North Carolina ties.
I know, seriously. So Kristen went, and she was a little bit young, so she went off to school at probably, she just turned 17 because her birthday's in June. So she was young, and I know that her parents were probably a little bit nervous to let their child go off into the world a little bit early, but she wasn't far away from home. Like, it's not as if she went a couple of states away. So she frequented coming home, and to my knowledge and the reports I read, like, she didn't really do the party college type thing. She remained really dedicated to her studies and working and just focusing. So she finished up her freshman year, and she was 17 years old at this time. And near the end of her freshman year, she, as you know, was interested in photography, and she had come across some information, probably through her school, because they really encouraged, as many colleges do, going abroad or traveling or doing whatever they can to immerse themselves in their passions, right? So she found that over the summer, they were offering a photography course at the University of California at Berkeley. And her parents were pretty apprehensive. She was young, and it was all the way across the country, and she'd be alone. And this family traveled. Like, they had been to several places. So it wasn't so much the traveling. It's that this would be a long-term thing, and she would be independent of them completely. But, you know, she poked at them, and she kept pestering them, and she said, I really want to do this. And her parents ended up saying, okay. So Kristen researched everything. She did all the things that you would hope someone would do, except oftentimes I feel like the parents do it. She probably did this because it sounds like she's an organized person, but also because it probably made her parents feel safe and that she was responsible and could venture across the country. So first, Kristen worked really hard, and she paid for this photography course on her own, which is over $900, which is no easy feat at a likely $6 or $7 an hour job.
Especially in college.
In college. So she probably saved for a really long time to be able to pay for this. And then she started researching places to stay. And through research, she found a living situation where it would be in a house, but there were several roommates. Because in the San Francisco area, I mean, I think it's always been very expensive. But at this time, again, you know, it was really expensive. And she was like, oh, gosh, I cannot afford to stay anywhere in San Francisco on my own. So she lucked out and found a place to stay with three other roommates. She actually spoke to the person, and her father spoke to the person as well. So everyone felt fairly comfortable with this. And the person that she was most in contact with was Griffin Cherry, who was one of the roommates. So everything's pretty squared away. Kristen didn't have a job, but I'll get to that in a moment. So on June 1st, which is actually Kristen's birthday, she sets off on a plane to San Francisco. As soon as Kristen arrived, she was picked up at the airport from the roommates, and they brought her back home and showed her basically where she was going to live. So when she gets back to the house, she meets the other roommates, and there was, like I said, Griffin Cherry. And then Griffin's girlfriend actually used to live with them, but she had just moved out, which is actually why Kristen had the room where she did. I guess they just had an amicable breakup. They wanted two different things. Then there were two brothers, Hans and Kurt, and then finally Justin. So when Kristen arrived, she actually had 3 weeks of time to herself before the course, the photography course, the whole reason that she's there, starts. So she sets off the very next day after she arrives, and she's looking for a job. And she had resumes that she worked really hard on, and she's basically traveling around San Francisco and the Bay Area trying to find a job. She goes into the mall and she walks into a place called Spinelli. She hands her resume. It's my understanding that they weren't even hiring, but the manager liked her and decided that she was going to hire her right on the spot. So this girl,
good for her,
goes out there. Yeah. And she is like, I've got no job and I'm not going to wait around for something to fall in my lap. I'm going to go do something about it. And she lands it. So
that's awesome.
Not only that, she is slated to start that pretty immediately. She also gets a second job, and this is at an art museum. So she's kind of balancing two things. And how it inevitably works out, really, is that she's working during the day, and she wakes up really early, goes to work, gets out of work, and her routine quickly kind of becomes that she goes out and does what you do. You go and sightsee, check out the city that you're in. So this brings us to June 23rd. So this is literally the day before she's slated to start her photography course that she worked so hard to save for, she's super excited about, and that's the whole reason that she's here. So to June 23rd, Kristen followed her typical routine. She worked, and she worked at Spinelli's, which was in the mall, like I said. You know, she's making small talk, and as usual, she's telling her coworkers kind of what her plans are, and she discussed that she was going to go sightsee and then possibly go to a party at Baker Beach, which is a popular spot, but she was kind of on the fence about it. And I imagine she was probably thinking that, hey, I have my photography course tomorrow. Her coworker stated that Kristen left work at about 3 o'clock. She's pretty prompt, so they felt very confident it was 3 on the nose. But quite unusually, they noticed that Kristen was walking with a blonde woman, and they spotted her inside the mall within an hour after she left for her shift. And that was pretty unusual because she actually usually just bolted out of that mall and went to do whatever she was going to do. So that was something that I think they remembered because it was so unusual. And that was actually the last sighting of Kristen.
Just to clarify, she didn't recognize the blonde woman.
I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
When Kristen didn't arrive home that night, her roommates weren't really concerned, and they didn't think much about it. Later reports say they kind of thought that she might have spent the night out. I've read in a couple of places that they suspected she stayed over someone's house because she had done it at least once before. I mean, I don't think she knew too many people, but she probably knew a couple. She had been there for 3 weeks. The next day, though, Kristen was supposed to begin her course, and she didn't show up. Now, we obviously know that through investigation and stuff, but ironically, someone from the University of North Carolina also attended this program with her. I don't really know if they hung out before the program started or if that person even arrived the 3 weeks prior like her. They knew each other well enough where they knew they were taking the course together, but this person's not really identified as a friend either. So I don't think it really is relevant, but I just thought I'd point that out. So this friend is kind of like, I wonder where Kristen is, tries to call her, but this is days where you're not really seeing cell phones. So when she did call her, she just got the answering machine and left a message. At some point in the next few days, Kristen's parents had called and they left a message to have Kristen call home. One of the roommates then called him back because I assume he heard or saw a caller ID or something along those lines. And they stated that they hadn't seen Kristen in a while. And this immediately alarmed her parents because Kristen is not like this. She will always call back. She will always check in. That's just the type of person she is. So they immediately booked a flight and got out to San Francisco as fast as possible.
I assume that's what a lot of families do. You know, they get out there. Boots on the ground type thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's really fortunate, although I don't know for sure, that they were able to call up and get a flight so fast, because I feel kind of like in some cases you might have to wait a day or flights are booked or something.
Yeah, they were lucky and they got out there.
However it worked out, they got there in pretty good time, I think. So they arrived Friday, and this part of the story kills me. So as soon as they land, they go straight to the police station, right? And they're trying to get someone to help them to look for their daughter. They were told by the Oakland Police Department that the officers that they just assigned the case to would be going home for the weekend and to come back on Monday. So between Friday and Monday, these parents, petrified, are left to handle this completely on their own. So they're making up flyers. They're handing them out. They are probably searching the city on foot, pretty much, renting a car. I don't know. And they don't really know her routines, I assume, at this point, although they could have. And I'm sure it felt like an aimless search, right?
Yeah, because you have no, San Francisco's huge.
Oh my
goodness. You have no idea.
Absolutely. I mean, I assume she tells parents the sights that she's seeing, but I highly doubt that she's breaking down her daily routines for her parents, right?
Right. And then, like, it's also, how did she get around? Did she Uber? Did she, you know, taxi? Did she walk? Did she take a bus? Right.
So, at some point over the weekend, you know, they're searching her room because that's the only place they probably can get clues. And they noticed in the waste paper basket that there was a newspaper. In the newspaper, in, like, the want ad section, there was something circled, and it said something along the lines of, like, a female friend wanted, someone who enjoys going to the beach, drinking coffee, enjoys art or photography, call if interested. Now, obviously, she circled it for a reason, but it's really unclear till this day, honestly, if she placed the ad or she saw the ad and circled it. But that was kind of the only thing that came out of the...
Well, did police figure that out?
No, they never were able to trace it to anything. Or reports are unclear. It says that police followed up on it, but nothing came from it. So I can only assume that they exhausted that lead till it couldn't be followed up with anymore. So that's really all the parents could do over the weekend. So it's Monday, June 30th of 1997 at this point. And when I say this kills me, it's when I think about it like this that it kills me. It is almost, or it is a week to the day that Kristen has vanished. They've lost an entire week before police officers start to search.
That's, time is everything. In any kind of missing persons, crime, absolutely, whatever.
So police did probably what the parents did and some more. And they actually even utilized police bloodhounds, which tracked Kristen's scent from the mall where she worked to public transportation, then to Ocean Beach, then to a place called the Cliff House, which is a touristy spot, which has like a gift shop and probably a pub, I think, and a beautiful cliff where you can probably take amazing pictures. And that's where the scent stopped, though. And I mean, at first they're like, well, maybe there was an accident or whatever, but this is so heavily populated that they thought it was pretty unlikely that Kristen could have had an accident without someone noticing. And being that she left work at 3, and if that sighting by her coworkers is accurate, 4 o'clock, and it's summer, so the sun's not going down till 7 or 8 o'clock at night, you know, most of her traveling would have been done in daylight hours. So for someone even to not see her in daylight going off a cliff would be, the odds are astronomical to me, right?
Right. 100%.
Aside from that, that's really as far as they were able to get until several weeks later. And oh boy. So someone calls in a tip to a local news station. Great, so we think. This guy on the other line...
I don't like how you're presenting
that's
this.
That's because this is how it feels. So this guy remains anonymous, and he states that he knows what happened to Kristen Mottaferri and that she was killed by 2 women because these women made advances towards Kristen. And Kristen refused, so the women got angry and killed her. And they drove over a bridge and into a nature-esque area and threw her body or disposed of her body there. So obviously the news station is like, well, we're going to go investigate that. Well, they looked. There was no body or anything. And then they were able to track down the caller. Now, this guy, whose name is John Anuma, was interviewed by police officers. They show up and the guy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't make any such call. And it actually didn't take too much to wear him down a little bit and get him to admit that he had made the call. And he said, yeah, it was probably a stupid decision, but I made up that story. These women actually are women that gave my girlfriend a really hard time at her job at the YMCA. And I wanted to throw him under the bus and make him pay. Yeah, by...
I'm sorry, what?
By calling and saying that they were involved in a homicide? But yeah, that's exactly it.
No, that's... That's not how you, like, pay someone back.
I mean, that's not the first thing I think to do when I'm mad at someone.
Me either.
But I guess people are different. So.
Yeah, but that's crazy.
Cops are probably doing what we're doing, scratching their heads and, like, this is absolutely nuts. But that's really all that they were able to gather. You know, it gave them no information, but they were very suspicious about this because, well, first, it's a weird thing to do, right? But secondly, when people usually call in tips, they don't tend to give something in such great detail. So they thought that was really unusual. And basically, he became a person of interest really fast. Now, I don't know if he was ever called a suspect by the police, but he's definitely remained at the top of the person of interest list. So other people they looked into, or at least went to talk to, is obviously her roommates. Now, there were a couple of weird things, but I think the police doesn't feel too strongly about the roommates. Now, a couple of them really, in essence, minded their own business and didn't really seem to know Kristen that well at all. Griffin, who Kristen had the most contact with and probably got all the information to move it into this place. He was the one that kind of collected rent and stuff. Now, they were all staying in the house, and the landlord actually was in the process of foreclosure. So this really didn't impact Kristen because they had something like 6 months to get out of the house. Kristen was going to be long gone before that had to happen. But really, she's paying rent to someone, and it's not going towards a mortgage or anything, so it's probably going in some way, shape, or form to utilities, but who knows what else. But I guess Kristen originally, like, had easily paid him cash, and then by the second month's rent, he was kind of like, I don't want to accept your cash, and I want a money order, which was kind of weird. But nothing could relate it to anything suspicious or regarding her disappearance. It was nothing other than like this weird other thing. So that's really where that went with the roommates. So this is about where the case goes cold. They had exhausted all their leads. She didn't really know anyone. Simultaneously, we have this guy from North Carolina, and he is someone that I think of as like an Eli Watchtalk from, if you haven't listened, it's our criminal conduct episode, which is really just
it's like, on VIP Patreon.
Yes, which is really like this good Samaritan who comes out of the woodwork and is like, I'm going to help fund an investigation privately because this case resonates with me and I want to help. So this guy comes forward and he does that. And spoiler alert, this guy has still remained working on this case all these years later.
Oh, dang. Good for him.
He's got podcasts about it, websites. He's funded a lot of things. He's traveled to the area. He's probably done more interviews than police have with anyone involved in Kristen's life. He's investigated over the years. He's done interview after interview. And I mean, he hasn't gotten much further, but his dedication alone and his unwillingness to be quiet is and unrelenting, really, gives me hope that they're going to eventually figure out what happened to Kristen. So basically, that was it up until about 2015. They had a world-renowned cadaver dog come out to the residence where Kristen had lived. Now, this blows my mind because this is 15 or so years later at this point, give or take some. And it just shocks me that a dog can pick up on scent. And in the basement, the dog did pick up on the scent of human remains. Fortunately, that didn't really go anywhere. A couple years later, forensic anthropologists came out and they took like a slab of concrete from the outside of the house and they tested it and matched it against Kristen's parents and it was a match. And they basically were like, Oakland PD, okay, we found something. Go do your part. And basically nothing has happened at that point. So then they find out that when Kristen lived there, at the time, right next door was a halfway house. And it was kind of like,
oh gosh,
not even registered as a halfway house. So no one really knew, I don't know if it was like under the radar or whatever, that convicted felons were living right next door, which if Kristen had known that or if her parents had known that, I don't know if she would have been allowed to stay at that house. Nothing ever came out of that, but that does give me pause as to something potentially could have happened outside of the house. And that's it. That's like all the information that we have. So the theories are this John Anuma guy, weird. And I'll tell you a couple of other things about him in a minute. Then we have random foul play, the halfway house next door, or the roommates. There is always died by suicide or walk away from your life, but I absolutely have zero thoughts or feelings about that. Like, I just don't think it's a possibility in this case.
Okay. I actually agree with you.
I can't even entertain it at all. Like, there's no evidence whatsoever to me.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, she went out to California to fulfill a dream of photography and, like, take the class. And there's no way that she then's like, oh, I'm going to leave my life.
Right. She's doing really well. She's not struggling with anything. She's not withdrawing from friends. I mean, she's going to do things like traveling and checking out the big city and working, trying to make ends meet. So to me, that just doesn't fit. So then I guess I go to the roommates, which I don't necessarily think it was anything with the roommates, because if this was something like a crime of passion or like a rejection or something, I think that they would have started with making advances towards her. And I think that Kristen would have told someone or would have tried to leave if she felt like she was uncomfortable with these roommates, or mentioned it to someone at work or said, can I come stay with you? I don't think that out of nowhere someone would have, like, tried to sexually assault her that lived in the house or hurt her.
So I don't necessarily know that about a disclosure, like, if they she told someone. But I can't imagine the three of them were, like, we're all in this together.
Right. I don't think that either. There was nothing from the ex-girlfriend, to my understanding, that she indicated that anybody was inappropriate. So it's not like there was this string of behavior, right?
Right.
I don't think anything could have transpired in 3 weeks where it would have been like, she broke my heart and now I've got to hurt her.
Yeah, I would support that. So what else are their options?
So then we have random foul play. And then we have this John Anuma guy. So a couple of things about him is, here's another one that went off to Hawaii, but that's neither here nor there. But he actually does have a history of assaulting women. So several women had come forward and said that he lures people by placing ads in newspapers.
Like the ad you found?
It's hard to say, but maybe. And when the women come to meet this person, he either has tried to assault them or steal their money. Now, he's denied this, but these women are like, he's held me captive. He's actually tortured me. He's brutalized me. He's raped me. And one woman went as far as to say that, well, now I'm going to have to kill you, like Kristen Mataferi.
Yeah, but that could be an empty threat. If it was in the newspaper and you're trying to intimidate someone else.
Well, I guess this particular woman had been held captive. But yes, it could be an intimidation tactic. Absolutely. However, if I look at this guy, And if we can say it's escalating, then it could have escalated to murder. This guy has no qualms with holding women hostage, so if she had went to meet someone about the ad, I mean, but to me, like, I feel like she might have been the one that placed the ad. On the other hand, though, who would look at the newspaper and circle their own ad, right? Like, you know what you wrote.
Yeah, no, I think it was likely, I mean, think about now, right? In 2021, there's an app, Bumble, and you can download Bumble BFF, and it's literally swiping to make friends, because making friends as an adult sucks, right?
Right.
So that could have been her resource to make like-minded friends while she was out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
And then anyone that answered it, or she answered it, either way, you have no idea who's on the other end of that.
Right. I mean, and this is before cell phones, so it's not like she would have taken the newspaper with her to, you know, she probably would have called from her home that number and said, oh, although I don't know, wouldn't you get a man on the other end of the phone and say, no, this ad was seeking female? But I have heard he's very charming. So he could have said or given off this vibe that he was a good guy.
So we don't think she left her life. We don't think that she died by suicide. We're leaning away from the roommates.
Right. So another reason I don't think she left her life is she didn't have a lot of money. She didn't pick up her last check. She likely had the $500 rent on her and a little bit of money that she withdrew from the ATM. But other than that, that's not enough. And then we don't think the roommates did it.
How do we not know who this blonde woman is?
Right. So no one has ever come forward to say that they were the blonde woman after all these years. They have put out pleas.
It's like in the Ray Grecar case. He was seen with a blonde woman, and this blonde woman has never come forward. But either way, you would think that if you're innocent, you would come forward.
Yeah, right? Unless they didn't really know each other that well or something, and some woman, blonde woman, watching the news wouldn't even realize it was her, you know?
Yeah, like they just walked out of the mall together and just somehow chit-chatted.
Right. I mean, I probably don't remember someone in a store that I've had two word exchanges with.
No, you're 100% correct there.
So I don't know that she has anything to do with it. The only other thing I can think of is that she is a woman from an ad and they met at the mall. But then you would remember that.
But then why? Right.
So I don't know what to make of that.
I don't like any of this.
There is one other theory that some people might not think it's ridiculous. But if you remember Robert Durst in the media, and
yeah, the serial killer or whatever.
Yeah. He's thought to be someone that could have abducted and killed her. He's linked to crimes in the area. So randomly, I guess it could have happened, but it would have to be a complete by chance thing. Robert Durst isn't out writing ads to meet people.
No, you're right. And I think this could be a by chance thing. Like, we very rarely land on random foul play with no, like, connection to the story, but that may be where I land on this one.
Really? You don't think John Onuma is good for this?
I think it's totally possible, and he's shady, but if law enforcement...
Or the people next door with the blood.
But why?
So, John Onuma, you know, he has a history, so that's easy for me to fall onto that one. The guys next door, depending on who was there, I mean, they could have tried to flirt with her, and she rejected them, and they heard her right in the driveway. And maybe it wasn't even they were trying to kill her, and then they accidentally did, but I can't think of any other reason. Like, this girl's not outwardly mean to people, so she wouldn't have offended them. I don't think that she would... Like, For example, let's say she left work at 3. She makes small talk with a woman in the mall. She goes sightseeing. She ends up coming home. And while she's walking in the door, something happens.
I mean, it's not impossible.
I mean, if she's
Let me ask you this. Where do you land?
I kind of think this John Enuma guy had something to do with it. Why are you calling in a tip to the news like that? That's so weird.
That is weird.
Like, inserting yourself into an investigation.
And that is, like, a trait. So I would say I think I'm going to be, like, 50-50 on him versus random foul play.
So I don't think the neighbors did it because...
No, I'm going to revise that. Oh, no, I'm not. Okay, I'm 50-50 on that. But if it's random foul play, there's like a 40% chance that woman is involved.
Interesting.
That's my math for the day.
So, I mean, I guess I'm between John. I don't know. I kind of think almost 100% John. I'll give him 80%. And I don't think it was the neighbors next door, although she was a very routine person. And if they knew that she came back home late at night, they could have been I don't know. So, yeah, I guess I'm between John Enuma and random foul play myself. But 20%, 80-20.
Yeah, I don't like any of this, though.
I know. It's so sad.
Is there a disappeared episode on this one? I'm going to watch it.
I don't think so. But there is unsolved mysteries, I think.
Well, Amy, I'll tell you this. I need you to not do cases like this because you just did the family, the Jameson family, and now you're going to do this. I need you to, like, break up the cases that I need to go investigate. Because I don't have time to go investigate.
You know, and I feel like they're so close because, and I don't know why Oakland Police Department won't follow up with that private investigation with the cadaver dogs and then a few years later with the forensics. Because I think that's huge.
I agree. I don't know why they won't either.
I feel like they're so close. I don't know. This private citizen has attempted to talk to John Enuma dozens of times, I guess, with no luck.
He won't talk, obviously.
Yeah. And obviously he adamantly says, like, get off my back about it. But yeah, that's...
Which, if he's innocent, that's fair. But if he's not, then...
Right. And I can't get over that they lost a week. What would that have done if they were right on that?
Yeah, I don't know. That gives anyone a week to cover up whatever they did.
That's true. Well, tell us what you think, guys.
Yeah, please.
And that's all I've got for this week. So we will see you next week. We do have a break coming up, just giving you, like, advance notice for Memorial Day. That's in a couple of weeks.
Yes. But don't worry, we have more stuff coming anyway.
Enjoy the weather, guys. Happy spring. And we will see you next time.
Yes. We'll be back soon.
Bye. Information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.